Another thing that's quite weird is the way that scientists can't seem to agree on what's happening in Gladstone Harbour in Queensland. There you have an idyllic natural setting right next to a massive industrial zone. Can this work? Peter Hadfield reports.
Gladstone has the largest dedicated heavy industry precinct in Australia.
A video from the Gladstone Ports Corporation promotes the city's success as an industrial hub.
Major industries have spent billions establishing themselves in the area, with a further $60 billion in the pipeline. Strict environmental controls and continuous monitoring ensuring...
Those $60 billion are going towards a huge port expansion, able to handle commodities like liquefied natural gas. But one industry isn't sharing in that prosperity. Many fishing companies say they've suffered because of reduced catches and widespread disease among fish in 2011, which led to a three-week ban on fishing. They helped commission a study by Matt Landos, Director of Future Fisheries Veterinary Services, to find out why. Last October, this is what he found.
We have multiple loading stresses into a very confined ecosystem. There was widespread disease in a widespread population of animals around Gladstone.
The Queensland government agrees there was widespread disease among marine animals, especially barramundi, but it disputes Landos' conclusion that the problem still exists or that industrial activity is to blame. A report from the Department of Agriculture, Fisheries and Forestry, issued this month, pointed the finger at the 2011 floods, which caused a spillover from the Awonga Dam. Dr. John Robertson was a lead investigator for that report.
This massive amount of water coming into the system had caused quite dramatic effects on the ecosystem in Gladstone Harbour, and what was estimated as 30,000 very large barramundi come out of a Awonga Dam over the spillway and into that system. Our conclusion was that most of the issues that we saw in Gladstone Harbour came from that event.
Landos emphatically disagrees.
It's a ponderous conclusion. It's one that won't stand up to any level of epidemiological analysis. Now, 30,000 sounds like a big number, but we know that massive schools of fish swim up and down the coast every year, hundreds of tons in a school, but they don't trigger an entire ecosystem collapse. It's into the realm of complete fantasy to suggest that a flood 9 months ago led to an outbreak of disease, when now the harbour is back to being fully marine. The ocean has simply diluted out the fresh water and it's now back to full marine.
Landos and other non-government scientists believe resuspended sediments from dredging and a leaking reclamation area where much of the sediment was dumped released dissolved metals and nutrients into the water. Added to increased turbidity, this metal pollution and toxic algal bloom weakened the fish to the point where disease and parasites took hold. But if that's the case, the metals and other pollutants ought to have shown up in the government sampling programs which monitor Gladstone Harbour. Dr. Julia Playford helped draft a report on water quality by Queensland's Department of Environment and Heritage Protection, also issued this month.
Well, the conclusions from the Water and Sediment Quality Report indicate that overall there was no evidence to suggest that dredging or industrial activities have changed the water and sediment quality sufficiently to cause or really contribute to the ongoing fish health issues observed in Gladstone Harbour.
But critics of the monitoring program say it's a long way from being scientifically rigorous.
The whole process is highly flawed from the beginning.
Professor John Brodie is a water quality scientist at James Cook University. He says each new development at Gladstone, from the dredging to the new coal terminal, is assessed separately.
At no stage do we have a cumulative assessment of all of those together. They're all run totally separate. So for a start, you get a very poor assessment regime when you look at them one at a time.
Glenry, from the dredging of the harbour.
As if the issue wasn't divisive enough, there's another element to the Gladstone story that only complicates the way scientists on both sides say the research should be done. Gladstone Harbour is part of a World Heritage Site. Last year, scientists from the United Nations Environmental, Scientific and Cultural Organization, UNESCO, came to see the site firsthand. When they met with port officials in Gladstone, They were serenaded outside by environmentalists opposed to the industrialisation of Gladstone Harbour. Maybe the serenading worked. UNESCO's report on the harbour expansion was damning. It expressed high concern at the dredging and dumping of sediment and questioned the setting of so-called trigger levels. Government scientists have set the level at the 95th percentile, meaning that an investigation would be triggered if pollution went above the level whereby 5% of species are harmed. Playford explains why it was set at that level.
The trigger levels at the 95th percentile were the trigger levels used by CSIRO, and they were also, I'm fairly sure, the same trigger levels used by the Coastal CRC in the 1990s. You've got this harbour, you've got sewage treatment plants releasing into the area, you've got a marina that's always been there, you've got QAL with a red mud dam, you've got this suite of industry in the area. There is no way under standard use of those trigger values you would make it a 99th percentile.
And that's where Landos disagrees. He says World Heritage status is one reason why the bar should be set higher.
Now, the area being dredged here was not a harbour. The area being dredged were seagrass meadows, mudflats that were part of a World Heritage area. World Heritage areas are listed for their outstanding values and are considered important for the highest conservation protection.
So even the definition of what constitutes pollution depends on the benchmark that researchers choose. Perhaps the best way to resolve this might be to get an international body to review all the data and the numerous reports in line with recommendations by UNESCO. But even on this question, the two sides disagree. Matt Landos again.
I think an international peer review team would help this to provide the public with some certainty. I can understand the public finding it difficult to understand why the government would continue to lie to them.
That's the sort of language that makes Julia Playford bristle.
I think it just continues to imply that scientists in SIRO and in government are not kind of rigorous scientists, and I don't think we should go there.
But Landos, Brody and other scientists make no bones about their mistrust over how the scientific research has been handled. And the two reports released this month have done nothing to settle that disquiet.
You never know, Reef, how much we love you.
Right now, neither side is singing from the same hymn sheet, either on the methodology, the conclusions, or even many of the basic facts.
Do you like the singing?
For The Science Show, I'm Peter Hadfield.
And just down off the coast, the iconic Great Barrier Reef.